Good evening, and welcome to what is the fourth of our Shavuaton, fourth out of six. Began on Sunday evening with the panel on conversion, and moved from that into Monday, where we talked about Rabbi Akiva's rags-to-riches story and his emunah, his faith. Tuesday evening, Rabbi Hecht talked about Rabbi Akiva's educational journey, from ignorance to scholarship. Tomorrow night, Rabbi Metzger is going to talk about Rabbi Akiva as a supporter of the Bar Kokhba revolt. And I understand that in Rabbi Hecht's class last night, the discussion came up regarding the students of Rabbi Akiva and were they part of the Bar Kokhba revolt. So that's going to be featured in the discussion on Thursday as well with Rabbi Metzger. So don't miss that. And then on Friday, Rabbi Sammy Bergman at 5 p.m. We'll delve into Rabbi Akiva's journey from halachic authority to mystic, and there will be music with that as well. So we have a lot going on this week, and I'm actually very glad and gratified to see many people who are sticking with the program for day after day. That's really nice. I am going to ask for those who are comfortable to please turn on your screens. I would be glad to see you as opposed to just, you know, seeing a box with your name. The name is nice, but the person is better. And I'm not recording video, so, you know, if you're eating dinner, that's fine. No one's going to watch you chewing except the people who are sharing the Zoom with you right now. So please do. It's a lot easier to speak when you're talking to faces. I should note, first of all, I put the link in the chat for the source sheet. But also, I'm going to put another link in the chat. This is the link that you can go to find the recordings for past sessions. So it's there in the chat, and that way you're able to download anything that you missed. So tonight, we're going to talk about what might be considered the least dramatic journey for Rabbi Akiva, although I don't think of it that way. It's, to my mind, possibly the most meaningful journey for Rabbi Akiva. And it starts with the source that I brought you as source number one on the sheet. And I actually see that I put the link for the recordings actually on the source sheet. So you even have that right above the number one. To the person who messaged me bad hair day, you know, we're on the same boat. Given where we are in the Omer, my beard's a bad hair day just on, you know, in its own right. But it's the way it goes. All right. So take a look at the source here in the Talmud in Psachim. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, Kishahayisi Am Ha'aretz. When I was in Am Ha'aretz, and I deliberately did not translate the words Am Ha'aretz, because it's the sort of thing which, by translating it, it sort of loses its energy. It becomes very dry. Am Ha'aretz, of course, literally is, you know, nation of the land, whatever you want to do with that. But what Am Ha'aretz really is used to mean is somebody who was uneducated. It often also means somebody who is lax in mitzvah observance, but that's not necessarily always the case, and it's not the case in this context. Am Ha'aretz means somebody who is unlearned. So when I was in Am Ha'aretz, Rabbi Akiva says, first 40 years of my life, Amarti, I said, Mi yitain li tamar chacham va'anashchenu kachamor. I wish that somebody would give me a tamar chacham, student of sages or Torah scholar, depending on your context, and I would bite him like a donkey. Amru lo talmidav. So Rabbi Akiva's students were horrified. And they said, Rebbe, amor kekelev, you should say bite like a dog, as opposed to a donkey. Now, as someone who doesn't live in a donkey-filled society, I have to admit being a little bit clueless as to why they preferred dog over donkey. I don't know if a dog's bite is somehow more refined than a donkey's bite, but we're about to find out why Rabbi Akiva chose donkey instead of dog. Amar lahen. Rabbi Akiva replied, Zen no sheikh v'shover etzem, v'zen no sheikh v'eino shover etzem. He said, no, I mean donkey, not dog. Why? Because when dogs bite, they break bones. When donkeys bite, they break bones. I wanted to break the bones of Talmidei Chachamim, of Torah scholars. Now, if you haven't learned Tosfos on this, you've just seen this passage here in the Gemara, tell me something. We'll get to Tosfos' explanation, but what could motivate that level of venom towards a Talmud Chacham to say, boy, I wish someone would show me a rabbi so I could bite him and break his bones. Tell me, what? How can you explain that line?
Jealousy?
Jealousy? Of what?
Of someone who knows more than him, and he might never reach that level.
So jealous of their knowledge?
No,
could be. So, interesting. Ralph says that it's wanting to learn from him. So, Rabbi Akiva is sort of positioning himself like a vampire. Interesting. That is a more benign interpretation than I have ever heard of what Rabbi Akiva said here. Kudos to you. Someone messaged me saying a bad halachic verdict. He's angry that they give bad rulings. That's an interesting idea. Moish, go ahead.
I think that he thought that the rabbinate was very alienist.
So, Moish, hold on there, because we're going to come back to that idea. That's Tosfos. So, we're going to come back to the idea that there was a sense of elitism that Rabbi Akiva was responding to. All sorts of ideas represented here. We're going to have to explore this. When I first planned the shiur, I thought we would talk about how Rabbi Akiva went from being that firebrand who is angry about something with the rabbis to becoming a serious peacemaker in two major rabbinic crises. And that's true. We are going to talk about that. But I realized as I was preparing it that it's more than that. What we're going to see is that Rabbi Akiva's youthful outrage was specifically due to an anti-establishment streak in him, and yet, in those diplomatic crises that I just referred to, he's going to take the side of the establishment. He is going to become the enforcer for the establishment. Effectively, the title for the shiur should be From Anti-Establishment to Enforcer of the Establishment. And my question is going to be the same, which is, what changed? And what can we learn from it? And I think it's not just maturity. You know, there are people who are angry when they're young, and then they get older, and they have a better sense of the world. That's true. But it's not going to be just that. And it's not just going to be, well, he learned Torah. There's a personality trait in Rabbi Akiva that I think serves him well in this reinvention and is a good model for us to consider for ourselves. Now, for those who were at the class on Monday, I spent, you know, quite a bit of time trying to show you the difficulty of reading sources about Rabbi Akiva. We showed that there's a long Gemara in Nedarim, there's a relatively long Gemara in Ksuvos, and then there's a very long piece in Avos de Rabbi Nassan, a rabbinic commentary and expansion of Pirkei Avos, and that they disagree with each other on key elements of Rabbi Akiva's story. So, in this shiur, we're not going to go through all of that again, because a fair number of you were there in that shiur, but for those who weren't there, the sources I'm referring to are on your sheet in sources 13, 14, and 15. You can take a look at it later. But in a nutshell, all three sources give us pieces of Rabbi Akiva's narrative of how he came to learn, how he went from being a shepherd slash woodchopper to becoming Rabbi Akiva, and the sources are consistent in certain major elements. He starts out life with little money and low social standing. He comes to learning late. It somehow involves his marriage to Rachel, daughter of Kalba Savua. And he learns for a long period of time, and he becomes a leading sage. Those are the common denominators. Where we end up being different, where we end up distinguishing between the sources, is that they disagree about how exactly he came to learning. Was it Rachel telling him he had to do it in order to learn? Was it after he was married and she said, hey, go learn? Was it from water eroding the stone? There are different answers for that question. And again, look at the sources and you'll see that. I see a message in the chat. Someone's having trouble getting the source sheet. So what I would recommend is that you click on the link. I just put it in the chat again. And it should give you an option for downloading it. Usually an arrow in the upper right hand corner. It depends a little bit on what you're using. If you're using an iPad, if you're using a computer, or using a PC versus whatever. But, that's the best advice I can give you in the middle of the action, unfortunately. And people in general are able to access it. Okay, so it's it's not everybody. That at least is good. I want everybody to have access to it. Okay. So that's just, you know, to be aware of, Rabbi Akiva's narrative is so big, and it's being written down a couple of hundred years after he lived. And the combination of those two elements is what makes it really challenging as you read the sources. I'm just loading the actual file into the chat, so maybe that will work for those who are having trouble connecting with it. Okay, but now let's get to this business about Rabbi Akiva and his anger issues. So we just saw in source number one that Rabbi Akiva wanted to break the bones of Torah scholars. You see that fire and independence in Rabbi Akiva when he is older, in his support for the Bar Kokhba revolt, which likely included a rift among the sages. Some of you may have heard this idea from me several years ago. You know how in the Haggadah we read the story of the Seder that Rabbi Akiva had in Bnei Brak? Right? You remember that story? So who's at that Seder? Rabbi Akiva, of course. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, right? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Tarfon. Which of the sages of that generation, this is a tough one, which of the sages of that generation is missing? Big names. Claudette, you're on mute.
Rabban Gamliel.
Rabban Gamliel. Harry says Rabban
Gamliel. That was what I was saying, yeah.
Okay, Claudette says also, Rabban Gamliel is not there. We know Rabbi Gamliel interacts with Rabbi Akiva. It's going to be an important part of this story. He's not there. So there are a few different explanations for why Rabbi Gamliel is not present there, but I want to highlight one for you. If you take a look at source number two on your sheet, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon in his Chagim U'Moadim suggests, and I'm going to read my English translation in the interest of time, there is room to hypothesize that the account of the Seder in Bnei Brak is also a historical anecdote from some work of Midrash or work of Agadah regarding the discussions and council of the great sages of Israel when they gathered in the center of nationalist zeal, Bnei Brak, the resident of Rabbi Akiva. That's why I think of Bnei Brak, the center of nationalist zeal. To speak of the exodus from Egypt, the time of our freedom, and also to express ideas and arrange counsel in the matter of the movement for freedom which then enveloped the nation. All of them responded to Rabbi Akiva's call. Each came from his place to celebrate the holiday of freedom in Bnei Brak and to take counsel together in one secret Seder without the participation of their students regarding the appropriate and necessary role of the sages of Israel in the zealous movement which waved the flag of rebellion against Rome. If memory serves, Rabbi Lau in his Haggadah also presents this idea. And as far as Rabbi Gamliel, we actually have a Tosefta in Psachim, which records a separate Seder that Rabbi Gamliel held. Meaning that he isn't at the Seder. Because Rabbi Gamliel, in his role as the Nasi, has a liaison with Rome. He can't be involved in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. So what I'm trying to show you is just Rabbi Akiva's fire is in him, not only in terms of what we saw in his youth, but it's there in him throughout his life. But here's a question which is going to lead us to a deeper understanding of what drove his anger at the sages. The problem, take a look please at source number three. Source number three is one version of the bond between Rabbi Akiva and Rachel. Rabbi Akiva ra'aya de ben kalba savua hava. Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd for ben kalba savua. We talked about his name Monday night. I'm not going through that now. Chazise brate davatsnia umali. Kalba savua's daughter saw that Rabbi Akiva was tsanua, private, modest, and good. And Amrali, and she asked him, Imekadish nalach azas lebei rav. If we do kiddushin, right, the first stage of marriage, will you go learn in yeshiva? And they did it, they did kiddushin, and she sent them off to yeshiva. Right? That's what you see there in source number three. Rabbi Akiva, in his unlearned youth, is described as tsanua and good. Clear? This is the same Rabbi Akiva who wants to bite the Torah scholars. Not only that, source number four, I brought it for you on the sheet, I'm going to say it outside of the text because it's long, tells the story of an anonymous worker who worked for somebody for 3 years, and he came and asked for his wages on Erev Yom Kippur at the end of the 3 years, and the fellow who had employed him said, I'm sorry, I can't pay you, I don't have anything. He asked him for money, don't have any land, I don't have any animals, I don't have any produce, I don't have any cushions, something, nothing. And he goes home depressed and despondent. And then after Sukkot, the boss comes to him with his wages, plus three donkeys loaded down with a big feast. And he explains why it is that he didn't have any of these things. He says, what did you think when I said I didn't have any money? Well, I assumed you had invested it in a really good deal. When I said I didn't have an animal, what did you think? I thought you must have hired it out. When I said I didn't have any land, what did you think? Well, I assumed that you had hired out the land to somebody. And when I said I didn't have any produce, what did you think? That it was untithed. And so on and so on and so on with each of the stories, with each of the aspects of it, Rabbi Akiva the worker judges his employer favorably. We have a work called She'iltos of Rav Achai Gaon, which dates to the 9th century, 8th or 9th century. And there they record this story of how the employee judged the employer favorably. And it turns out that there they identify him as Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Akiva in his youth as a worker, and he judges his employer favorably, assumes the best about him, and he learns in the end that actually what he had thought was accurate. So, Rabbi Akiva, in his youth, wants to break the bones of Torah scholars. And yet, Rabbi Akiva in his youth is tsanua, and he's good, and he judges people favorably. Would the real Rabbi Akiva please stand up? Can I explain this? And the answer is, Tosfos can explain it. Tosfos in Ksubos, if you take a look at source number 5, offers us an answer. He doesn't deal with the Gemara in Shabbos, he deals with the fact that Rachel said that Rabbi Akiva was really good. He says, V'hada amar be'elu ovrin. When the Gemara in Psachim says about him that he said, when I was in Amaretz, I would say, I wish someone would give me a Tamar Chacham and I would bite him like a donkey. He says, Mashma delo havamali. That sounds like he's not a good guy. Ikala Memer, he says, you could say, Dehasam lav mishum shahaya sone tamire chachamim. It wasn't that he hated Torah scholars, per se. Ela mishum shaya savur shem misga'in al amei ha'aretz. What Claudette said, what Moish said, that he felt that they lorded it over amei ha'aretz, the unlearned people. Mipnei Torasan, because they had Torah scholarship. V'hayu tamide chachamim son'im osam. He believed, as an ignorant person, that the Torah scholars were lording it over everybody else. V'gam mishum shelo haya menicham osam liga bahem. And also because the Torah scholars would not allow unlearned people to touch them. And that's because of the issue of Tum'ah and Tahara. As the Tosfos goes on to bring from the Gemara in Chagiga, that the clothing of an Am Ha'aretz, who's not learned in the issues of purity and impurity, has to be considered Tameh automatically for somebody who's careful to separate from impurity. So therefore, they won't be in close contact. Well, if someone won't be in close contact with me, my assumption is that person looks down on me. Avo mikol makom shomer mitzvos haya. However, Rabbi Akiva wasn't someone who was alienated from Torah. He just felt that the rabbis were elitist. He felt they were arrogant. And that was what drove him. Clear? We good? Okay. So now that I understand Rabbi Akiva, that he's outraged at the establishment, he feels like they are overbearing, he feels like they are using their power over everybody else, how does Rabbi Akiva become the enforcer of the establishment, as we are now about to see? That's my big question here. So, first of all, just for your knowledge as we go into what's coming up next, Rabbi Akiva, in his initial stages of learning, learns primarily from Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, as he's also known, and Rabbi Yoshua. That's going to matter for the stories we're about to read. Take a look first at source number 6, please. This is the first of our two stories. This is the story of how Rabban Gamliel was deposed. Masa b'talmud echad shabal lifnei Rabbi Yoshua. There was a student who came to Rabbi Yoshua, Amar lo, and asked him a question, innocent sounding question. Tfilas arvis rishus ochova, mariv. Is that permissible? Not permissible, excuse me, is it optional? Or is it obligatory? Davening mariv. Do you have to do it? We know that Shachris and Mincha are obligatory, but what about Mariv? Is that really an obligation? Amar Le Rishus, Rabbi Yeshua says it's optional. Balifnei Rabbi Gamliel. The student goes to Rabbi Gamliel and asks him the question. Now, right off the bat, you know there's something wrong here, right? You asked a question, you got an answer. That's where this stops. You're not supposed to go looking for a second answer, especially when the answer you got was lenient. What are you doing? Why are you looking for a chumrah? You went to Rabbi Yeshua. He said, yeah, it's optional. You want someone to tell you that it's obligatory? Why are you now hunting for another answer? Nonetheless, that's exactly what he did. He goes to Rabban Gamliel, and he informs Rabban Gamliel in the part that I skipped. I just skipped it because I was tired of translating. But in the part that I skipped, he asks Rabbi Gamliel the question. Rabbi Gamliel says it's obligatory, and he says to Rabbi Gamliel, you know, Rabbi Yoshua said that it is optional. Well, Rabbi Gamliel is the head of the sages, and he's not having that. So Amar lo, Rabbi Gamliel says to him, this is where we pick up in my translation, Hamtein achi kansu bali treisin lebeis hamedrash. Wait while the shield bearers, the Torah scholars who debate with each other, wait while the shield bearers enter the study hall. Kishenichnesu bale treisin. So these Torah scholars enter. Amad hashoel vishal. The questioner got up and he asked, Tfilas arvis, rishus, ochova. Mariv, optional or obligatory? Amala Rabbi Gamliel chova. Rabbi Gamliel staging this, right? Rabbi Gamliel says to him, it is obligatory. And then Amar Lehem Rabbi Gamliel Lachachamim, Rabbi Gamliel turns to the sages, and he says, Klum yesh adam shecholek bedavar zeh? Does anybody think I'm wrong here? Anybody out there disagree with me? He says. Amar Le Rabbi Yoshua Lav. Rabbi Yoshua, who had a position of stature among the sages, says, oh no, we're good with your answer. Amar Lo, to which Rabbi Gamliel says, you know, the funny thing is, V'alo mishimcha amruli rishus. Someone told me in your name that Mariv is optional. Amar le Yehoshua amod al raglecha via idubach. He says, Yehoshua, no honorific there, Yehoshua, stand up on your feet and they will testify against you. Unclear to me who they are, but that's what he says. Amar Rabbi Yeshua raglo. Rabbi Yeshua stands on his feet, va'amar, and he says, if I were alive and he was dead, so I could deny when he says that, when he says that I said that, that I said it's optional. If this fellow here could not testify against me, I could pretend that wasn't what happened. V'achshav shani chai v'hu chai, but since he's alive and I'm alive, heyach yachol hachai l'hak cheshes hachai. What am I supposed to do? In other words, they got me. That's it. He's testifying accurately, and I'm stuck. So hayah Rabbi Gamliel yoshev v'doresh. Rabbi Gamliel is sitting and teaching in the base medrash. Rabbi Yoshua omed al raglav, and Rabbi Yoshua is standing. Ad sherininu kol ha'am, until everybody complained. V'amru l'chutzpis ha'meturgaman, and they said to Chutzpis, who was the translator. Translator doesn't mean literally translator, but it means that he was the one who would explain and expand upon the shir, what Rabbi Gamliel was teaching. Amod, they said, stop, v'amad, and he stopped. They stopped the shir. Amri, and they said, ad kama mitzari v'nezel. How long is this going to go on that Rabbi Gamliel starts trouble for Rabbi Yoshua? Because this was not a one-shot event. But Rosh Hashanah ishtaked tzarei. Last year, Rosh Hashanah, he gave him a hard time. You may be familiar with that story. Rabbi Gamliel declared the new moon, and Rabbi Yoshua disagreed with Rabbi Gamliel and felt he was wrong. And Rabbi Gamliel made Rabbi Yoshua show up on the day that he thought was Yom Kippur with his money belt and with his walking stick. So he did it to him on Rosh Hashanah. B'b'choros ma'isa de Rabbi Tzadok Tzare. There's another story involving Rabbi Tzadok, B'choros lamed vav amed aleph. He caused him trouble there also. Hachanami Tzare. He's doing it again. Tav and Avre. Let's get rid of him. And they deposed Rabbi Gamliel over this. Who took Rabbi Gamliel's place? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, right? That story that we read about in the Haggadah, Harei Ani Kiven Shivim Shana, that he's like he's 70 years old, that's that story. So they deposed Rabbi Gamliel because Rabbi Gamliel was so overbearing. Okay? I mean, not okay, but you know what I'm saying. You follow what I'm saying? We're good? Story time's okay? Okay. Now, what I want to show you, in the midst of this conduct of Rabbi Gamliel, is what happened that time with the date on the calendar for Yom Kippur. I told you there's a dispute between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel about the calendar. Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yoshua, you show up on the day you think is Yom Kippur with your money bag and with your money belt and your walking stick. So take a look at source number 7. Look at what happened in that story. Rabbi Akiva was the one who went to Rabbi Yoshua and said, you have to accept whatever Rabbi Gamliel says. I would have expected Rabbi Akiva to be outraged by what Rabbi Gamliel did. If Tosfos is right, that Rabbi Akiva says, those sages, they lord their power over everybody else. They think they're so much better than us. I would have expected him to bite off Rabbi Gamliel's arm. That's what I would have anticipated. But it's not what happens. Just the opposite. Take a look at source number 7. Holach Rabbi Akiva umitzol Rabbi Yoshua kshu meitza. Rabbi Akiva found his Rebbe, Rabbi Yoshua, upset. Amar lo Rebbe mipnei ata meitza. He says, Rebbe, why are you so upset? Amar lo Akiva, roi lo sheyipo lemita shnemas archodesh valyigzar alav gezerazu. He says he'd rather be bedridden, meaning sick, for a year, rather than have to do this, to violate what he believes is actually the day of Yom Kippur. Amar lo Rebbe, tarsheni lomar lefanecha davar echad shali madatani. He says, Rebbe, permit me to tell you something that you taught me. Amar lo amar. He says, speak. Amar lo harehu omer atem 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 shalosh pa'amim. He says, when you read the Torah's description of the calendar, you see that it says, you, your holidays, your calendar, and so on, you declare it. It says you 3 times. To teach, Atem afilu shogigin. You set the calendar, even if it's by mistake. Even if you made a mistake, it's still valid. Atem afilu mezidin. You do it, even if you got it wrong on purpose. You alter the calendar on purpose. Atem afilu mutin. And you, even if you were fooled, doesn't make a difference. The way the sages set the calendar is binding. Balashon hazeh omru lo, amar lo, Akiva nichamtani nichamtani, and Rabbi Yoshua says, you have comforted me, you have comforted me. So that in a position where it's his own Rebbe, Rabbi Yoshua, who is being put upon, he defends Rabbi Gamliel. It's a remarkable decision that he makes there, I would have expected him to be angry. Why isn't Rabbi Akiva angry? Why isn't he biting the arm of Rabban Gamliel? That wasn't rhetorical. What do you think? I don't know.
Wasn't this a different stage of life?
So that was why I brought the Bar Kokhba revolt piece before. Rabbi Akiva lost the fire of youth.
Not the fire of youth, but his attitude toward the Chachamim.
But what changes? Why does his attitude to the Chachamim change?
He's learned a lot. He may have felt that it is important that the central authority, the rulings of the central authority, be maintained.
So now he's come to believe that the central authority is more important. Could be. Izzy and then Moish. Izzy, you were going to say?
By this time he's learned a lot.
He's learned a lot.
He's wiser.
Right, he's wiser. He knows more Torah, certainly, at this stage. Okay, Moish.
Before, he was fighting from the outside. He's still fighting now, but he's on the inside. Got to change your tactics.
But why is he okay being on the inside? This would have offended him years earlier.
That's where he is.
Okay. So, I'm going to show you the second case. The second case involves his other Rebbe. Rabbi Eliezer. This is a famous story. We're not going to go through all the details of the story. Normally, I don't call sources famous because I worry somebody heard about it, somebody never heard of it. I don't want anybody to feel bad. But this is one of those stories that you can really call famous. This is the story of Rabbi Eliezer against the world. This in the Gemara, it's called the Tanuro Shel Achnai, referring to a particular oven and the laws of how that oven, if it becomes impure, can be purified. And the story was that Rabbi Eliezer took one position, and the sages took the opposite position. And Rabbi Eliezer insists I am right, and in source number 8, I brought you part of the Gemara. I'm going to read it in English, and you can see the original Hebrew there as well. Rabbi Eliezer gave every answer in the world, and still they did not accept his view. He couldn't convince them. He said, if the law is as I say, may this carob tree demonstrate it. And the carob was uprooted 100 cubits from its site, some say 400 cubits. Those who were here on Monday, we had Buxer in Monday's shiur, now we have Buxer in Wednesday's shiur also. The carobs are everywhere. But the carob tree is uprooted. And there are other signs that he brings to prove that he is right. He says that the river should prove that he's correct, and the river runs upstream to prove that he is correct. He says the walls of the Beit Midrash should prove that he's right, and they start to collapse to demonstrate that he is correct. The sages do not accept any of it. Finally, he says, let the heavens themselves prove it. And a voice from the heavens emerges and says, why are you guys starting up with Rabbi Eliezer? The law always follows Rabbi Eliezer. And the sages led by Rabbi Yoshua say, too bad. Because the Torah is not in the heavens, God gave it to us. It's for us to determine it. That's the way it goes. And then we pick up right here in the Gemara, in the source number 8 in the English, we're at the paragraph that starts with the word they say. We've had some people join, I think, so I'm just going to post the link again for the source sheet for them. There we go. They say that on that day they brought all the items Rabbi Eliezer had declared pure and burned them in fire. And then they voted and excommunicated him. Crushing. Right? Rabbi Eliezer, he's right by every objective sense. Miracles happen to demonstrate just how right he is. And they said no, they burn whatever he declared pure, and they excommunicate him. But he's not there. Someone's got to go tell Rabbi Eliezer. They said, who's going to go inform him? Rabbi Akiva said, I will go, lest someone inappropriate go tell him and destroy the entire world. If he hears it from someone unworthy, oh boy, you don't want that to happen. So what did Rabbi Akiva do? He wore black, cloaked himself in black, and sat 4 cubits away. Rabbi Eliezer said to him, Akiva, why is today different from other days? why are you dressed in black? Why are you sitting far away? What is that? Right, a little manishtana there. He replied, Rebbe, it appears to me that the colleagues are separating from you. He hints to him what has happened. And at that point, he, Rabbi Eliezer, also tore his clothes, removed his shoes, and sat on the ground, and his eyes ran with tears, and there is much more to the story there. But once again, Rabbi Akiva sides with the sages, against his own Rebbe. It's against Rabbi Eliezer. He should have been standing there with Rabbi Eliezer, saying Rabbi Eliezer is right, and I don't care, the whole world says he's wrong. So I'll give you my answer, which fits with some of the answers that were given before. And the truth is, I think my answer is obvious, and yet it's still an important insight. As somebody said before, might have been Izzy, I'm not sure, the difference between young Rabbi Akiva and older Rabbi Akiva is knowledge. Right? It's knowledge. What we saw in Tosfos before was that young Rabbi Akiva was angry about things he didn't understand. And when he gets older, he comes to understand what they're all about. And the best proof of that is source number 9. Rabbi Menachem Meiri, in his commentary to that same story about give me a Talmud Chacham and I'll bite him like a donkey, says there's one line that's missing in our Gemara. He's not the only one to have it. Rabbi Yitzchak Abu Habim Menoras Hamaor had it in the 15th century. Dikduke Sofrim records it as well. It's not in our Gemara, but it's clearly in theirs. It begins the same as ours. K'shayisi Am Ha'aretz. When I was in Am Ha'aretz, I would say, were someone to give me a Talmud Chacham, I'd bite him like a donkey, which bites a great bite and breaks bones. And then he adds, Achshav Ani Omer. Now that I am learned, you know what I say? Miyitein li Am Ha'aretz va'anashchanu kikelev. Would that someone would give me an Am Ha'aretz and I would bite him like a dog. And some had that addition of like a donkey as well. In other words, it's now reversed. Rabbi Akiva originally was the Am Ha'aretz who was judgmental towards the Talmud Chacham. He recognizes, I was judgmental when I was an Am Ha'aretz. And if somebody showed me myself from 15 years ago, now, I would bite myself like a donkey. He says, I recognize now that I was wrong. Rabbi Akiva has learned something. But the reason he's learned it, and the trait that enables him to learn it, is humility. His humility is what enables him to reverse himself. Rabbi Akiva is a giant of humility. And I'll show you sources that demonstrate this. Take a look, please, at source number 10. Source number 10 is from Avos Rabbi Nasan, the expansion of Pirkei Avot, describing how he started to learn. This is Rabbi Akiva's first stage in learning. In this version of his story, he has a son already as well. Halachu ubno v'yashvu etzam malamdei tinokos. He and his son went and they sat by the school teachers. Right? Malamdei tinokot. Teachers of little kids. Amarle Rebbe lamdeini Torah. And he said, my master, he says to the fellow who's teaching little kids, he's 40 years old. He says, teach me Torah. Achaz Rabbi Akiva Barosh Haluach Ubino Barosh Haluach. So he took one end of the board they use, a little mini blackboard. He holds one end, and his son holds the other end. The smart board wasn't working that day. The internet was down. Kasav Lo Aleph Bet Velamda. So Rabbi Akiva, the 40-year-old man, is sitting there with a school teacher who writes Aleph. Writes Bet. And Rabbi Akiva says, oh, Aleph, Bet, huh. Which makes it sound like he's illiterate to this point. It's really remarkable. I don't know if this is meant literally or not. Aleph, Tuf. Learns the letter Aleph, first letter in the alphabet, and Tuf, the last letter in the alphabet. Toras Kohanim, the Lambda. Toras Kohanim is what? Anybody know? What is Toras Kohanim? Vayikra, correct. Because the practice historically was you started to teach children with the book of Vayikra. Right? Today, they don't even bother to teach Vayikra in schools. But Vayikra was where you started, because Vayikra is the book of purity. And the children who are pure should come and learn the book of purity. So that's what he starts with. Hayalomed vaholech, and he learns and he continues to learn, ad shalamad kol haTorah kula, until he has learned the entire Torah. The humility it takes for him to go with his son and sit in front of a school teacher and with all the little kids, right? And learn Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. That tells us a lot about him. But it's not the only example of his humility. I love the following story. Look at this story in source number 11. It needs a little bit of background. There was a sage in the time of Rabbi Akiva by the name of Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, or Hyrcanus as it's written in the Gemara. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus was very old, and he was extremely accomplished. And there was a major halachic debate. And the sages heard that the son of Hyrcanus had ruled in a way that they thought was wrong. And so they went to him and asked him the question, did you really rule this way? And he said, no, it's my brother. My brother is who you're thinking of. Yonatan ben Hyrcanus, who he describes as Bechor Satan, something of a demon, this brother of mine, Dosa. Yonatan. So look at this story in source number 11, which involves Yonatan ben Hyrcanus. Pagabob Rabbi Akiva, this fellow Yonatan ben Hyrcanus encountered Rabbi Akiva. Akshile, he asked Rabbi Akiva a lot of questions in learning. V'okme, and he stumped him. He stumps Rabbi Akiva. Omarlo, and he says to him, Atahu Akiva Sheshimcha Holech Misof HaOlam V'yad Sofo. You're the Akiva they make Shavuot Tonim about. Right? You're the Akiva they write books about. You're the Akiva who has, his name go from one end of the world to the other. Ashrecha Shezachisa L'Shem V'adayin Lo Higata L'Roi Bakar. Oh, are you fortunate? You got a great reputation and you're not even at the level of a cattle herd. Look at you. To which Rabbi Akiva responds, Amalo Rabbi Akiva, Vafula Roitzon, I'm not even a sheep herder. Forget the level of a cattle herder. I'm not even the level of somebody who herds sheep. So Rabbi Akiva absorbs it and makes a self-deprecating comment. Of course, we know Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd. That's a side note. But the point is, Rabbi Akiva does not respond with anger. Rabbi Akiva says, I'm gonna take it. He's okay. He's humble. I'll give you one more example of Rabbi Akiva's humility. I love the stories about Rabbi Akiva. How could you not love the stories about Rabbi Akiva? Take a look at source number 12. Another one. There's a Mishnah in Erevin which says that a student said something in the name of Rabbi Yishmael in front of Rabbi Akiva. Mishum Rabbi Yishmael, Amar Tamar Echad Lefnei Rabbi Akiva. So, Tanya, I have another source which says, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Lo Amar Rabbi Yishmael Davar Zeh. This lesson that the student reported in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishmael never said it. Ela oso Talmud Amar Davar Zeh. The student said it himself. It was the student's chiddush. It was the student's novel idea. V'halacha ka oso Talmud. And the law follows that student. You follow? It's a little tricky. The student was quoted first as saying something in the name of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva said, no, it was the student's own idea. It wasn't Rabbi Yishmael's idea. And it's correct. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If it were Rabbi Yishmael's view, then I would understand. That's the law. Some random student says it. That shouldn't be the law. You're contradicting yourself. You say it wasn't Rabbi Yishmael's view, implying that the law is not like this statement. But on the other hand, you're telling me that the law follows this student. Which is it? To which Rabbi Yehuda answered, Lo amra Rabbi Akiva ela lechadeid ba hatamidim. Rabbi Akiva said this in order to sharpen the students. Meaning, as Rashi explains, it really was Rabbi Yishmael's statement. And the law follows it because it was Rabbi Yishmael's statement. However, Rabbi Akiva wanted to encourage the students to think independently. So he said, the student said it himself and he is right. In order to encourage the students not simply to repeat the things that he said, but to come up with their own ideas. Rabbi Akiva wants to encourage his students to think independently. You follow? That's the humility of Rabbi Akiva. He doesn't want you to tell him what he already said. He wants you to think and come up with your own approach, which is very interesting in its own right, because one of Rabbi Akiva's Rebbeim, Rabbi Eliezer, was known for trumpeting the idea of Mesara, that you follow what your Rebbe said. But Rabbi Akiva says, come up with your own approach. So this is the humility of Rabbi Akiva. He is a man who, in the beginning of his career, is filled with outrage at the hubris of sages. That's where he is in the beginning. And that outrage, by the way, I think may make him credible to Rabbi Yoshua and to Rabbi Eliezer when he comes to them representing the establishment. Right? Meaning, Rabbi Akiva goes to Rabbi Yoshua and says, accept what Rabbi Gamliel said. Rabbi Yoshua knows that Rabbi Akiva would normally side against the overbearing establishment, not on it. Rabbi Eliezer, when he comes to Rabbi Eliezer and says, there's an excommunication, Rabbi Eliezer knows this is coming from somebody who doesn't just listen when the establishment says something. He's somebody who has a measure of outrage. He would not be on the side of the establishment if he didn't believe it. But Rabbi Akiva also has this humility to him. And it's that humility which enables him to learn. That's how he's able to go off and study in yeshiva and become Rabbi Akiva. And that humility enables him to grow out of his outrage and to say, you know, they may be overbearing, but they can also be right. Just the fact that I don't like it doesn't mean it's wrong. And so he reverses himself. You follow? That's what I understand about Rabbi Akiva. It's not a chiddush. It's not a novelty. Meaning, anybody here could have said, humility will enable you to learn. Humility will enable you to grow out of the outrage that Rabbi Akiva displays in his youth. And you'll be right saying so. But I think it's very important to understand it, in particular, because we wanted the Shavuot tone to be about how we reinvent ourselves as well. Humility is what enables us to reinvent ourselves. The openness to learning a new idea, to learning a new approach, to getting ideas that maybe were not what we had all along. And that's true for the after-disaster reinvention after a pandemic, and it's true for general reinvention in life. If we want to be able to evolve, we need to be able to also have the humility to learn, as Rabbi Akiva did. Wow, I monologued a lot. Questions, comments? What do you mean? Yeah.
So, if Rabbi Gamliel, who is a Nasi, said something, you're supposed to listen to him.
So, Apia Torah Yerucha isn't the Nasi. That's based in.
That's based in.
You can make the argument for Rabbi Eliezer's case with the excommunication that that's a based in action. But you're right in principle, that when the establishment speaks, it, you know, halachically, it comes with a degree of authority. But again, when Rabbi Akiva was in his youth, he wouldn't have adopted that idea. He would have rejected that idea.
In his youth, he was in a situation where he was very anti. He was frustrated. They looked down on him, and he didn't like that. And he wasn't people.
That's what he felt. Yeah.
People, that's what happened with Hasidus. The Hasidus started that way also, because they weren't honored. Talmid HaChamim had kavod, and the peasants, if you will, the unlearned, will look down on.
Possibly. I don't want to get into Hasidim and the early Hasidus. That's a whole shiur in its own, well, set of shiurim in its own right. But the, but in terms of the point that you're making, yes, this is the switch Rabbi Akiva has to make, and it's his humility that enables him to do that. That enables him to grow out of where he had been and take on this new persona. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very, very much, everyone. Again, tomorrow evening, Thursday evening at 7:30, the same Zoom, Rabbi Chaim Metzger is going to talk about Rabbi Akiva and his role in the Bar Kokhba revolt. So please make sure to...